Indeed. Eina kunake. In the deer calf. Uchai. Greatly. Etasmin. In this. Kritanija abhimanasya. Who accepted the calf of his own son. Aha, aha. Every day. Tatposhana. Maintaining that calf. Palana. Protecting from dangers. Lalana. Raising it or showing love to it by kissing and so on. Prinana. Petting it in love. Anujanena. By such attachment. Atma Niyamaha. His personal activities for taking care of his body. Saha Yamaha. With his spiritual duties. Such as nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity. Purusha Paricharya Adyaha. Worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And performing other duties. Ekachaha. Every day. Kati payena, with only a few. Aha ganena, days of time. Viyujamanaha, being given up. Kila, indeed. Sarve, all. Eva, certainly. Udavasan, became destroyed. So translation. Gradually Maharaj Bharata became very affectionate toward the deer. He began to raise it and maintain it by giving it grass. He was always careful to protect it from the attacks of tigers and other animals. When it itched, he petted it. And in this way, he always tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. He sometimes kissed it out of love. Being attached to raising the deer, Maharaj Bharata forgot the rules and regulations for the advancement of spiritual life, and he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about his spiritual advancement. So, you can repeat, gradually Maharaj Bharata became very affectionate toward the deer. He began to raise it. And maintain it by giving it grass. He was always careful to protect it. From the attacks of tigers and other animals. When it itched, he petted it. And in this way, he always tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. He sometimes kissed it out of love. Being attached to raising the deer, Maharaj Bharata forgot the rules and regulations for the advancement of spiritual life, and he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about his spiritual advancement. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. From this, we can understand how we have to be very cautious in executing our spiritual duties by observing the rules and regulations and regularly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we neglect doing this, we will eventually fall down. We must rise early in the morning, bathe, attend Mangalarti, worship the deities, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, study the Vedic literatures, and follow all the rules prescribed by the acharyas and the spiritual master. If we deviate from this process, we may fall down, even though we may be very highly advanced. As stated in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 5, yajna dana tapak karma tachajam karyam eva tat yajna danam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Acts of charity, sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great soul. Even if one is in the renounced order, he should never give up the regulative principles. He should worship the deity and give his time and life to the service of Krishna. He should also continue following the rules and regulations of austerity and penance. These things cannot be given up. One should not think oneself very advanced simply because one has accepted the sannyas order. The activities of Bhartamaras should be carefully studied for one's spiritual advancement. Very interesting. So, Om Ganati Mananda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Maha. So, comparing Bharat Maharaj's situation with our situation, we should examine those things and see those things that are essential for keeping our position in Krishna consciousness and for advancing in Krishna consciousness, of course. So there's many essential items. And, of course, the Nectar Devotion lists the most potent practices in devotional service. And one is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. The other one is living in a holy place. In other words, your house, even if you're not living in the temple, obviously most devotees don't live in the temple. But even if you're not living in the temple, then you make your home like a temple. You have a little altar at home, and you have everything in the house, pictures of Krishna. You can have one or two pictures of your grandmother if you want, or whatever, relatives if you want, or your little children, whatever. But mainly it's pictures of Krishna everywhere. And everything is just reminding you of Krishna in the house. Even if you have a big screen TV, it should be like Krishna videos on it. Yeah, nowadays, of course, you go into people's houses and the TV is as big as the whole wall. There's no room for pictures anymore. Because the TV is like a 55, 60, 80-inch screen. So you make your house a holy place, or you live in a holy place. You chant the holy names, you worship Tulsi, engage in Sankirtan, and all these different practices are essential to maintain one's status in Krishna consciousness. So that's the do's. That means what you should do. Of course, then there's the 16 rounds you're vowing to chant every day, the Ekadasi, the other things like that. And then there's some do-nots. Like Prabhupada said, making a play on words, we have so many donuts in the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, donuts, do-nots. Because the reason Prabhupada mentioned that was there was a donut shop right next to the temple in 26 Second Avenue. And the devotees would regularly go into that shop and buy donuts. And so then what happened is when Prabhupada would walk by the donut shop, the devotees would slouch in their chairs so they couldn't be seen by Prabhupada. That's why Prabhupada came in with a donut. We have so many donuts. You want donuts? We have so many donuts in the Krishna consciousness movement. So, but the donuts, or the do-nots, are very important. And I'll mention several of them. Of course, Prabhupada was very strict. He even mentioned several times about not reading newspapers. Of course, that's not a strict do not. But it's one that not that one should become so much immersed in the news, in the, all the mundane news. Just like yesterday, there was the inauguration and all those other things, which is all right. I mean, you have to be aware of this inauguration. You know, someone comes up to you and says, what about the inauguration? And what's an inauguration? You have to be aware of these things. So, but it, people are so much immersed. For example, when I was young, and still the fact that on Sunday, in New York, at least, because that's where I'm from, the newspaper was actually this thick. I don't know. Has anyone seen that in New York? I don't know about Boston. About a little thinner. But in New York, it's this thick. And then you get delivered to your door. I mean, somehow or other, they deliver it. Some big hulk of a guy, you know, can carry like 20 newspapers, is able to deliver it to your door. And then you spend the whole day just perusing the Sunday Times. It's the Sunday Times, the New York Times. And then there's all these different sections. Like you have the travel section, you have the fashion section, you have the house section. You know, so the ladies are looking at the fashions. Men are generally not looking at the fashion section. Then you have the sports section, and that's the big one. The sports section, you know, which thug attacked which thug in which city. You know, football and baseball and what, ice hockey. Of course, Americans are not so big on ice hockey. And for Indians, it's cricket. You know, the cricket teams and all those other stuff. So people reading the sport. And then, in addition to that, then you have, on Sunday you have all the sports games on TV. So there's one particular person I know. Anyway, he's married to my mother. So, and Sunday he gets this big stack of papers and he spends all Sunday looking through them and channel surfing through the different sporting games on, what's it called, ESPN or something like that? Am I right about that? The Sport Network. Nowadays, of course, they have these networks for everything. The cooking network, the home shopping network, so that people can spend all their time looking at the different things to shop, and they're bidding on, they're calling up on the phone, they're bidding on their things, you know. So much wasted time, because that's called prajalpa. So Prabhupada says something about devotees don't like to really get into these things. I mean, obviously, once in a while, Prabhupada would read the newspaper and understand what's going on, which is fine. Or go on to CNN or to, you know, USA Today and look at these things, but not spend the whole life doing these things. So that's a do not. And one of the main do nots, or donuts, that Prabhupada mentioned was do not eat food cooked by non-devotees. Because, as Prabhupada mentions, that when you eat food cooked by someone who's not Krishna conscious, it makes the mind wicked. And what do I mean by make the mind wicked? You become influenced by the modes of nature that were influencing the person who cooked. Like if the person is very passionate, then you become very passionate. Person, if you go to a diner, and you buy food, and the person who was cooking is a drunkard. Of course, he's not drinking while he's cooking for you, hopefully. But let's say he's a drunkard in the mode of ignorance, and he's sneaking out to smoke cigarettes every 5 minutes from the diner. Then your mind will become immersed in ignorance. Or even if you do something innocent, like you go to the store and you buy some nice organic potato chips. And we have nothing against organic potato chips. But if you go there, and then obviously the potato chips were made by a person, or a person who was operating a machine at least, and then somehow or other you feel ignorant or passionate, or maybe even goodness. You feel some goodness after you eat your potato chips. So But it's risking your spiritual life. Of course, if devotees make potato chips, that's fine. Health issues aside, which we won't discuss in this class because that's not the topic of this class. But if obviously, if someone who is Krishna conscious makes potato chips and offers it to the deities, then certainly it won't hurt your Krishna consciousness. So that was a big do not that Prabhupada gave us. Don't eat food cooked by non-devotees. Because it carries the karma, it carries the karma too. Not only the modes of nature, it carries the karma of the person. It's like getting a blood transplant from somebody. Why? Because according to the Ayurvedas, when you eat food, it becomes transformed into blood. The food becomes, that, I mean, not only according to the Ayurveda, according to modern understanding, medical understanding, when you eat food, eventually becomes transformed to blood and bones and all the other different features of your material body. And so that was a very important do not. And there are other, and there's other do nots too. I mean, do not eat grains on Ekadasi, like today is Ekadasi, because that's also considered very, very sinful to eat grains on Ekadasi. So in other words, we should understand all these do nots in addition to the do's. And in this verse, the word used is yama, which is actually one of the first I was looking for, but I remember reading it in the verse. Oh yeah, saha yama, which is interesting. Saha yama, with his spiritual duties such as nonviolence, tolerance, and simplicity. So, yama means like restrictions. So we have to be aware of all these different restrictions. Of course, one could say this is too much for my mind. You devotees have all these restrictions placed upon you. But then it depends how fast you want or slow you want to advance in spiritual life. You choose. It's not that one is forced to follow these restrictions. It just depends on one's objective in life. If one wants to advance quickly, then you follow the restrictions. And if you want to advance slowly, then you just don't follow so many restrictions. Then you eat any damn thing, like Prabhupada said about his disciples, my disciples will eat any damn thing. Prabhupada said that in a sarcastic sense, you understand. Not that he wanted his disciples to eat any damn thing, but sarcastically he was saying that, you know, my disciples, they're not very strict about Krishna consciousness. And then another point is, when we first join the movement, we are very strict. And then after some time, like Bharat Maharaj, this is very parallel. Our lives are very much parallel to Bharat Maharaj. Like Bharat Maharaj, when he first took up spiritual life, he was very strict. Then he became what we call complacent. And then, as it's described here in the beginning of this verse, gradually Maharaj Bharat became very affectionate. It wasn't that all of a sudden, you know, he was doing all these things. He saved the deer. Yes, that's all right. And he fed the deer, that's all right too. But the material affection became more and more manifest. So in the same way, as far as ourselves, when we deviate from the spiritual life, it's a gradual process, like devotional service advancing a gradual process, and falling down is a gradual process too. It starts with laxness in the principles of Krishna consciousness. And we're not talking about the four regulated principles. I mean, obviously, that's something different. It's not that all of a sudden one day is one is an ecstatic devotee and the next day you're smoking marijuana. It happens gradually. You know, one day when one first joins, one is getting up early, chanting his rounds, chanting 64 rounds on a Ekadasi, really enthusiastic. And then after some time, he starts to get up later and later and later, you know, and then he comes halfway through Mangalarti. Then he comes at the end of Mangalarti. Then he comes after Mangalarti. Then he comes, after Japa is finished. Then he comes to greet the deities in the morning. Then he or she, because that happens both kids, then he or she comes on the Sunday feast. It's actually interesting. I mean, the nice thing about the Indian culture is that people are trained to come see the deities at least once a day. Like I was speaking to Sundarananda, he said, you know, I really want to live near the temple of Nugaloka so I can, before I go to work, because he's working, before I go to work, want to take the blessings of Krishna. It's just like in Jaipur, if you go to the city of Jaipur, that practically the whole city, at least those who are Hindus, will go to see Radha Govinda in the morning and before they go to work. But in sometimes in the Western world, in America, people will live right next to the temple and they won't take the blessings of the deities before they go to work. Can you imagine? I'd be scared. It's like before I go on a trip, I take the blessings of the deities. Before, when I come back from the trip, after I bathe, of course, then I come back to see Krishna. You know, before I eat, usually. So it's a gradual process of deviating from Krishna consciousness, like the Prabhupada says here, gradually. So, and then after some time, one becomes more and more immersed in Krishna consciousness and just comes, not just for the Sunday feast, he comes during, just for the festivals. You know, Janmashtami, one can live like one block from the temple. I've seen that, one or two blocks from the temple. And then you just see them for Janmashtami. And you say, oh, it's nice you came back to town. I say, oh, no, I haven't traveled at all. And so, so taking the association of devotees is practically one of the most essential things, or associating with devotees on a regular basis for spiritual life. Like when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked about the quality of a Vaishnava, first thing he said was, Asat Sangha Chage Vaishnava Char. A Vaishnava avoids bad association. And then Lord Chaitanya spoke about good association. And then when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, what is the most miserable situation to be in? And you would think that, you know, miserable situation, no prasadam, that would be miserable. Or a miserable situation, it's too cold out. Or a miserable situation, no money. You know, we have all these different concepts about what a miserable situation consists of. But he said the most miserable situation or position to be in is to be separated from the devotees of the Lord. Can you imagine that? I mean, when I experience separation, it's so miserable. When I go to visit, you know, certain relatives, you know, after one night, it's like, you know, I want to just like scream and jump out of the building. And unfortunately, it's a penthouse usually. But a penthouse on the Upper East Side of New York. So, because it's just not being with devotees, not being able to say Hare Krishna. I mean, to me, even when if I have to go to the bank here in Hillsboro and I can't say Hare Krishna to the teller, it's miserable. Or Hari Bol Prabhu. I mean, sometimes it even slips out and I'm embarrassed. I like speaking to my mother sometimes. It's just like, you know, my mother says goodbye and I say, okay, Hari Bol. So what did you say? So association with devotees, regular hearing of Bhagavatam, avoiding food cooked by non-devotees, rising early in the morning before the Brahma Muhurta begins, chanting one's rounds attentively, avoiding the offenses. I mean, we could actually do like a think tank right now and go through all the different things, the do's and do nots to avoid falling down from devotional service, avoiding the offenses. Then you have the 10 offenses. And not only do you have 10 offenses on chanting, but you have offenses against the holy Dham, offenses in deity worship. Nectar devotion is elaborate about those things. So these are also do-nots. We got tons of do-nots.
We can set up a database with all the do nots that we have. Like when you go to a holy place, we were mentioning the other day, you should respect all the residents of the holy place. If you disrespect them, that will cause you to have spiritual difficulty. Even if the person in the holy place is trying to steal or take your money. That's a hard one, isn't it? Like you're going to a holy place and someone's trying to pick your pocket. And if you offend that person, you can fall down. Of course, don't give them your money. So in other words, there's so many fine points that one has to be aware of in order to keep one's position in Krishna consciousness, because it is dangerous in this world. Anything could attract, just like you have the story also of Ajamil. Ajamil was a good devotee, and then just one little thing attracted him. He was inattentive. And then he was gone for years. For years. I mean, he blooped for something like 60 years. Right? A 60-year bloop. And we see that. You know, we've seen that happen with advanced devotees, sannyasis. We've seen that happen with all sorts of devotees in our movement, older devotees. They go away for some time. Of course, everyone eventually comes back. Like Bharat Maharaj eventually came back, but it took two more births for him to come back completely. I mean, next birth he was pretty much back as a deer, but two births to actually be back as a human being. So anyway, so not to frighten everybody with this class, but we have to be very attentive as to the rules and regulations and, you know, force ourselves to follow. Even sometimes, you know, it doesn't, you know, we may not have an attraction for getting up early. You know, that we may be immersed in a comfortable bed, comfortable futon, or something like that, a, you know, cushion like Hiranyakashipu. And it may be cold out, but then you just get up. You force yourself to get up because it's, you're afraid of Maya. You're afraid of deviation from Krishna consciousness. Afraid of losing the human form of life. I mean, so many things. I mean, also, devotees can have pets. That's another point I wanted to make. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not that we're criticizing Bharat Maharaj for having a pet, but he neglected his spiritual life because of his affection to the pet. You know, if a devotee wants to have a pet tarantula or a pet... What is that? I saw someone with a pet. What is that thing? Animal gives fur? Chinchilla. The devotee had a pet chinchilla or a pet whatever they want to have. That's fine. You know, Bharat Maharaj accepting the deer and having them as a pet is fine. But he neglected his spiritual life. He became overly attached to the pet, thinking himself the doer, thinking himself the protector of this pet. Okay, so that's all we want to speak about today. So any questions or comments about that? Yeah.
At the beginning, it says that gradually.
Gradually.
And then the last line is that he very quickly forgot his whole spiritual position.
He gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about his... this is a whole progression here. No. It's not that after a few days he forgot. It's, first of all these other things happened, and then after a few days he forgot. See, if you read the whole verse, I'll read it again. Gradually, Bharat Maharaj became very affectionate toward the deer. He began to raise it and maintain it by giving it grass. So that takes some time, you know. He was always careful to protect it from the attacks of tigers and other animals. That's fine. Of course, what's not fine is too much affection. When it itched, he petted it. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, Prabhupada one time scratched a cat, you know. There was a story about that. And in this way, he always tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. That's the problem. That's all he was thinking of. He sometimes kissed it out of love. I mean, you can kiss your tarantula out of love if you want. Being attached to raising the deer, Maharaj Bharat forgot. Here's the one. The rules and regulations for advancement in spiritual life, and he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after that, So this is a whole progression from one thing to another. After a few days, so after he forgot, he gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After that, after a few days, he forgot everything about his spiritual advancement. It took time. It's not that, like, after 3 days, you know, he was completely in Maya.
Yeah.
That was the point I was making. It just doesn't happen that quickly, usually. Unless, you know, unless Madonna comes to you or something like that. Which isn't usually the case. Of course, she's kind of... Anyway. So, it's like that. You know, Janma Ishwarya Shruta Shushibir. Yeah, so what's the question?
Well, the question is based on the concept of forgetfulness. Krishna
says
he supplies it. I can understand neglect. You know, it goes very gradually, and it comes to the level of neglect.
Yeah.
And then when you neglect, then you're still in somewhere, you're remembering your position. Identity has been removed. His position of advancement.
Yeah, he forgot. Prabhupada used the absolute word here, everything.
Yeah.
About his, that means everything, 100%.
So infatuated by the relationship.
Yeah, so infatuated by the relationship. But also was Krishna, like you said, providing the forgetfulness to teach him a lesson. You know, Krishna actually has said in the 15:15 of the Gita, Madhak Smritir Gyanam Aponam Cha, I give... everybody, remembrance, forgetfulness, and intelligence. So Krishna says, you're gonna learn a lesson for neglecting your stuff. You're gonna see what happens. So he forgot everything. Pretty heavy, isn't it? I mean, here was someone on the platform of Bhava, and then he forgot everything. But it was gradual. Prabhupada makes the point twice here that it was a gradual process. He gradually forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of God. That's the next and last sentence. And then the beginning, gradually, Maharaj Bharat became very affectionate. So it was, the affection grew towards the deal. And then he forgot everything. So Maya's like that. You just don't see her coming or see it coming. Or see him coming. It's just... gradually creeps up on you. It's like cancer. You know, cancer starts as a single spot. Like if you have melanoma or basal skin cancer, isn't it? It starts as like a little spot. And then it gradually takes over the whole body. It's like spiritual cancer. So you have to be very alert to follow the rules and regulations. And even if you have a pet, get up early and go to Mangalarti and take care of your pet after Mangalarti, after the morning program is over. We're not, you know, sometimes devotees use this, and of course I did too when I was a very fanatic person, to, you know, really heavy people out who had pets. You know, I really certainly burnt some devotees out, isn't it? And, you know, if they had some pet, I just said, you're going to take birth as a dog or a cat. Of course, some of the devotees became a little attached to the pet. They would get gigantic banners in front of their house with pictures of the pet on it. Remember that, Mother Krishna? Pictures of their dog. I mean, that's a little too much. A banner in front of the house. So, you know, I was a little fanatic about that. So, you know, there's no harm. As long as you're thinking Krishna consciously about the pet and trying to engage it in devotional service, like Shivananda Sain was with the dog, or Lord Chaitanya even had a little puppy when he was young. You know that story? Lord Chaitanya had a puppy, and of course Sachi Mata wasn't too happy with it because she thought he's a Brahmin, you know, he shouldn't be engaged in having this moochy animal at home. And so she waited until Lord Chaitanya was gone, and then she gave the puppy away, and she told Lord Chaitanya the puppy had run away. And what happened is the puppy went back to Godhead. So a devotee, another thing is, that, you know, if with looking at Shivananda Sen's example, that if an animal takes shelter of you, you really have to take care of it. No, it's your responsibility. However, you still have to maintain your spiritual practices and not focus your love and attention on the animal rather than on Krishna. Yeah.
Another question about circumstantially, there's apparently no option when it's moving or in a ride by the room.
Yeah.
Avoiding food, at least produced by some mechanism. Where I'm about to go to some clinic, and there's no guarantee the devotee's going to be cooking, and I heard that some devotee who's there offers it. Where I was thinking, it comes to my plate, which I just offer it there, because it's still being cooked by someone. The purpose of perhaps healing.
Prabhupada, when he went to people's homes, if people were eating meat, he probably wouldn't eat cooked food in that person's home.
Yeah.
Probably would just take some raw food or fruit or something like that. So at least they should be vegetarians. I mean, that, you're going for health reasons. So at least, hopefully, I assume if you're going to an Ayurvedic clinic or something like that, they're going to be vegetarians. So then just offer it in your mind like that. When you know, you offer it. You should offer the food.
Some of the devotees that have been there told me that their wife went and made the offering. Then another person cooks it, but they made the offering.
Well, you just offer it in your mind when they put the plate in front of you. Just chant Hare Krishna. I mean, you're doing it for your health. It's not a long-term thing.
Yeah.
So you have to be practical. Yeah, myself, when there's any question about someone who's cooking or something, I'll just go revert back to a raw food diet. That's what I usually do. You know, someone asked me a question yesterday about health. One of my sannyasi godbrothers asked me about, he said, what do you do when you travel? I said, I generally inform the person ahead of time so they know what to make for me, like with just boiled quinoa, which is not going to be so difficult to make, at least for most people. And I said, if there's any question about it, or if they don't know if I'm just going for one day, I just revert back to a raw food diet. And it hasn't killed me yet. So I'm extremely careful about who cooks for me, what they cook. And, sometimes our tongues just get out of control. I mean, that's a real problem with ourselves. The tongue is just so strong. I'm not speaking about your situation, because you're going to a health clinic. That's a unique situation. But ourselves, you know, our tongue just gets out of control. We go into the supermarket and we see these things that we've been so addicted to before, and we just can't stop from taking them, even though they may be harmful physically as well as spiritually to us. So a devotee is very strict. In India, the Brahmin class, even when Prabhupada talks about when they join the army, they would cook for themselves. Prabhupada, I was listening to a lecture where Prabhupada was talking about how in the army would provide little stoves for each one of its soldiers so they could cook for themselves because they wouldn't eat anything cooked by anyone else. Some people wouldn't even eat what their wives cooked. I mean, that's a little fanatic for me. I mean, what's the use of a wife if she can't cook?